out there and make sure that we educate and educate and educate road users so that in the ultimate end we don't see this carnage which actually we're experiencing on the road. Coming from a Limpopo button, easily say 10 people died, very stressed dead anyway, because they were busy on the road. People on the road, I don't know whether it was going to be an easy one or whatever, but you also think of Moroto Road, which is very challenging. One of the killer roads in the Republic, the worst, I would say, killer roads in the Republic of South Africa. And therefore, it tells that every, for the past 3 days, when you talk about accidents, you always think of the impact and the contribution and the role of RAF in this whole agenda. So therefore, we hope that as we will be talking to the APP of RAF, our consideration will be, as honorable members and as community, we need to really make sure that part of our role in contributing towards what IF is doing is to educate our community so that they'll be able to respect the rules of the road, so that they can be able to respect driving and drivers, respect everything, but also pedestrians, because nowadays you see a lot of casualties as in pedestrians. Without much ado, the agenda will start to be changed to, we'll start with the consideration, we'll start with the road accident at RAF presentation, and then we'll consider the minutes after we have dealt with the RAF issues. But suffice to say, 25 to 10. 25 minutes will be okay, Chairperson, for presentation from your committee, probably, so that we can be able to conduct 30 minutes if we can, so that we give ourselves time to interact with the presentation. But I would give an apology from Honorable Hadere, who is running late, and I'm sure the other honorable members will join. Having that said that, having said that, I'm Gilead Magazi, the chairperson of this portfolio committee. On my right here, the extreme just closer to me is Honorable Mushieno, member of this committee. Honorable Molaudi, also a member of this committee. We've got Honorable Gregor Solita, who's also the member of this portfolio committee. At the back, we've got Honorable Husina, also a member of this committee, and we've got the shadow minister, Honorable Defletas. I wanted you to look at me anyway, because you've been looking up. Hi. We also have Honorable Keita. These are the members of the committee. We'll introduce the others as they will be coming in. Chairperson, if you can introduce your team and then fire on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson Mark Abbey, honorable members of the portfolio committee, Deputy Director General of the Department of Transport and officials of the department, Vice Chairman of the Road of the Amalia, and also next to me is our pastor, Tando, who chairs the Operations and IT Committee. And next to him is Ms. Quella, who chairs the Risk Management and Ethics Committee. I will defer to the CEO to introduce the executives because we do have a full complement of executives. Mainly really in recognition and in deference to members of parliament, since this really is the first meeting, and we are really honored to be here and look forward to an active participation. Without further ado, I'll hand over to the CEO of the fund who will then take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, members of the committee. I'm Gene Watson, the CEO of the RAF. Just by way of introduction, we have our executives with us. It will be the first time for most of them to come to Parliament, which is why they are here, certainly in their rest capacity. So if I introduce them, then left, we have Ms. Kula, who was previously the COO at the Government Employees Pension Fund. She's our Chief Strategy Officer. We then have Yolanda Sampillon, who was the CFO at Danel, who's our CFO. Ronnie Gowden from the Development Bank, he's our Chief Audit Executive. Lindy Javahu, who's our COO in charge of our claims environment, previously the COO at the AG. We then have Bandile, who is ex-Momentum, and Ian Barriel in charge of our human resources. As part of our development, we also have one guest with us, Ms. Constance, who is in charge of our payroll. She has recently done very well in terms of her work, and as part of her recognition, she's with us today. So that would be our team chairperson. We usually won't come as a block, but I think it's important that you see us or you do know us going forward. Sorry, and Ms. Vuyo Kazimenye, who is our Chief Information Officer from a listed company, a paper company. The presentation, ladies and gentlemen, follows the directive, the invitation we received, which was to speak about our 2014-15 Annual Performance Plan and Strategic Plan. It covers six main areas, which would be background information for those members of the committee who are new to the RAS, where the business is at the moment using our 2013-14 financials. It goes into our strategy, talks briefly about our financial projections, speaks about the key challenges we face as the institution, and then closes by talking about the transformation which has been underway over the past 2 years. Our corporate and statutory form is shaped by the Road Accident Fund Act of 1996 and ended in 2005, took effect in 2008. Our core business is to compensate for loss or damage wrongfully caused by the driving of a motor vehicle. The emphasis in our current legislation is on a wrongful that needs to be proven first. We provide compulsory cover to all users of our roads for death and for injuries sustained, particularly injuries of a serious nature. We are a public entity, Schedule 3 of the CFMA. There are also various court rulings which have shaped our mandate, specifically in respect of passengers as well as life partners in recent years. In summary, we are called upon to provide a social security safety net. As the chair mentioned, the accident about the HIPPO. Within an hour, our team was called to assist, and people really look through the RAS beyond its statutory form to provide assistance and support where there have been deaths or injuries. We indemnify, we rehabilitate, and we compensate the injured. We promote the safe use of all South African roads. Our business model is actually not a complicated one. It centers around road activity. Our revenue is generated from the amount of fuel sold because we get a fuel levy, which is currently 1.04 rand per litre of fuel sold. That forms over 95% or 98% of our income. We do also have investment income, and from time to time we do get grants from the National Treasury to support the fund. On the cost side, again, it centers around road activity. Because of road use, you have a risk of crashes. Those crashes, in turn, vary in frequency and severity, and they inform or shape the value of our claims. We do also have administrative and third-party costs, which together form our gross expenditure. Our business structure was looked at in the last 2 years, but really to say that our core business centers around the claim profile. So in that respect, we have five pillars in our claims environment. Those would be the gray bars you see on the chart on your left. Origination, that's the step between the outside world and RAS. It's how people access the fund, how people submit and lodge claims, and how those claims are verified. We also, through that structure, have 83 hospital-based offices. Our plan is to ramp that up to 90. We have four customer service centers, a slightly bigger one in Mpumalanga, and then we have five regional processing units who also have walk-in centers. The second pillar is where the bulk of our work happens, is determination. Having received the application for claim, the process of assessing it, adjudicating it, quantifying it, and determining the merit or the extent to which there was wrongdoing or negligence then takes place. The litigation is the step that most mostly familiar with. It's where the claimants make use of legal representatives to argue the extent to which they were wrong or were not wrong and the extent to which they had lost or been or suffered damage. Then finalization is our financial step, is the process of payment. And the most important step, which seldom gets the spotlight, is what we call post-finalization. Once the money has been paid out, you now have somebody who has been injured permanently or seriously, who needs ongoing care. And this is where we provide what's called post-crash care to accident victims. In fact, there are over 120,000 people who depend on us in some form or fashion for this type of assistance. On the right-hand side, we have the usual corporate functions: human capital, risk management, the forensic work, stakeholder management, project management, assurance and monitoring, and marketing. Of course, we also have finance and each of the executive portfolios. Our infrastructure is made up twofold. We have a physical infrastructure and we have a virtual one. Our head office is in Centurion. We have the five processing units in Pretoria, Johannesburg, Durban, East London, and Cape Town. We then have new customer service centers. The Nell Street office was opened in 2012 as a pilot. Because the pilot proved successful, we then opened four more in Mafikeng, Bloemfontein, Polokwane, and Kimberley. These are all operational, and the process of launching them is underway this month. At a virtual level, we have a call center. We have an interactive web. We have the social media footprint on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, too. Our structure has been looked at. About 2.5 to 3 years ago, there were almost 13 different types of functions reporting to the CEO of RAS. We've narrowed and rationalized it down. We therefore have the executive authority, who would be the Minister of Transport, board of directors of 10 board members, plus one appointed by the Director General of Transport. You have the CEO, and then you have six executives in charge of the key portfolios. You have ops, strategy, finance, human capital, information and marketing. And then you have your governance and assurance executives, your company secretary, as well as your chief audit executive. I think in closing, the background is really just to bring the committee back to the central point, which is we live in a country that has one of the top five largest road networks in the country. You have over 10 million vehicles. You have almost 25 million people traveling on our roads every day. As a consequence, you do have crashes. I think committee members would be well aware of these: 40 deaths a day, 14,000 a year, 800 to 2,000 injuries, 1 in 20 of those being serious. As a consequence of that, you have a road accident fund which is called upon to provide support. It is a 70-year-old regime. It's not a new regime. In the 1940s, I think it's 1946 to be exact, the first accident distillation came in. And at that point, a convenient funding source was the fuel levy. And that became the basis of how this arrangement has been funded over the last few decades. But in the 40s, the emphasis, what it was about, was to protect the wrongdoer from being sued. It wasn't about support. It wasn't about social security. It was simply to say somebody did wrong, and they were now going to be sued at common law. They may lose their house, and if they lose their house, their wife and children and family will therefore be adversely affected. So let's put in place a mechanism to protect them. But over the years, with the advent of more and more road deaths, certainly with the shift towards social security in our country, the emphasis now is on how we support road victims. So an example would be the crash with the hippopotamus. The question that those people in that community are asking is, please, can you help us bury our family members? Our law, however, would say, let us first establish wrongdoing. And if it is there, and if so, to what extent, and that will determine how we provide assistance. And that really is the cash to our dispensation. The conversation is fault-based. Fault must be proven or excluded. Many a times there are people who are seriously injured, but they don't satisfy the requirements of our law. As I mentioned, there are rulings and court orders which have been issued, which shape our mandate, and they're not always consistent. So you could have accident victims with the same type of injury, same type of crash, but their compensation would differ. There is also a great deal of subjectivity. The best example of the subjectivity would be a certain very well-known advocate was in bumper bashing a few years back. And it was in the morning before he went to work. He was taken to the casualty, the doctor examined him, gave him analgesics and a soft collar. Eventually, when his claim was paid, he was paid out 2.8 million rand because of the long-standing impact of that morning off on his career path. And that really is the distinction that arises from the RAF legislation. We know of the microeconomy that has been created around the RAF and sustained by the fund. There are lawyers, advocates, assessors, experts, investigators. We also know of contingency fee arrangements where in reality, well over 25% of what the RAF pays was actually claimed as legal fees by attorneys. Fortunately, the courts have given this clarity in recent months. We also know from our engagements with deputy judge presidents throughout the country that in many instances up to half of the courtrolls are populated with RAA matters. And this, of course, has an impact on the justice system and their ability to perform effectively. Most importantly, in terms of our legacy, when we look at where we are, very often claimants are not the primary beneficiary of the benefits we pay out. And then, of course, in truth, and I think the committee will be aware of it, as the RAF, as long as our history may be, we also had a history of patchy performance over the years. If we then look at where the business is, stepping off from the issue of a patchy performance legacy, concerted effort was put in over the last few years to improve our performance as the fund. So in 2013-14, our revenue increased by 13% to 20.6 billion rand. Claim processing improved by 47% to record high of 22 billion. We paid 15 billion the year before and 12 billion in claims the year before that. Our cash expenditure on claims exceeded the net fee levy by 1.9 billion rand. This was possible because the RAF had accumulated cash reserves in previous years where productivity was not as high. We proactively made operations more accessible. We answered over 220,000 calls by our call center, engaged 25,000 people on our social media. We also went out on a program we call Half on the Road, which is a very exciting one, and we will extend invitations to the committee. We basically pop up our full suite of services in a community, in a park, in a hall, on a Saturday morning and perform our work. We saw over 20,000 people through this program in the financial year and settled over 376 million rand in claims. On an earlier version of the PowerPoint apology share, I think the figure I put was 161. I just needed to fix that. We implemented a new organizational structure, which is aligned to the executive portfolio that I showed you, but also brought in segregated duties and roles. What the history of the RAF was is that a claim officer or a claim handler essentially saw a claim they received through RAF. So they were responsible to assess, to validate, to determine its worth, and then to approve the payment. And you cannot operate effectively in that environment. So we've also segregated those processes. We implemented quality assurance in all our processing centers, and our complaint experience reduced. We ran an independent survey on the request of the Minister of Transport to gauge people's perception of the fund. It's being done annually by the same provider, random sample of claimants, the public, and the attorneys. And our citizens' perception and our customer satisfaction improved. I think importantly, the message which comes out of the survey, which we watch, is that it requires, or people require us to be more responsive as an institution. And that's where a lot of our focus must go. Our staff complement grew to 2,288. This was enabled by funding additional budgets the Treasury had allocated. For us to improve our performance, we needed to improve productivity, and our human capacity, of course, plays a part in that. We implemented a policy business unit, a combined assurance forum, and maintained an enterprise-wide risk management framework. Independently validated by Ernst & Young, our risk maturity improved to level 4 out of a maximum of level 5. Level 5 would be a risk mature enterprise. Level 3 would be a compliant one. Audit findings were resolved throughout the year, and many risk mitigation measures were implemented successfully. We're pleased to advise the committee that for the second year now we have got a clean audit, and we've been invited to our second clean audit awards by the Auditor General. We implemented a performance management system and succession management plan. Prior to 2012, there was no performance management system at the RAF. It was an audit concern. We then implemented a revised policy, procedure, and performed quarterly reviews on every employee, including the CEO. The Draft Road Accident Benefit Scheme Bill was published by the Department of Transport, and we played our part in supporting the department as that process unfolds. I mentioned there were significant court rulings on contingency fees. We executed our previous strategic plan and met 83% of our targets. But overall, if we look at where the business is, a concerted shift has been made in our focus to socioeconomic impacts of crashes on families, homes, and communities, and putting people first. For too long, the RAF was perceived as a business of lawyers, where we speak to our lawyer who speaks to a claimant's lawyer who speaks to a claimant. In line with the principles of Bart Pili, we therefore have taken it upon ourselves to be more responsive. The seriousness has also been introduced in respect of what we are, what we are supposed to do, and what our employees are required to do. If we then move on, Chair, to the strategy. The strategy which was first devised in 2013 to simplify the strategic plans which existed in the RAF domain. 2013, 17, and the 14-15 APP were approved by the Minister. The mission is simply to provide the highest standard of care to accident victims to restore balance in the social security system. If we don't support, if we don't assist accident victims, they inevitably will become reliant on different structures of the state. So it is important we do so and we do so quickly. Our vision is essentially the object of our law. It's appropriate cover, rehabilitation, compensation, and indemnification, and to do so in a caring and sustainable manner while supporting the safe use of our roads. Our values, for a few years we've kept Ubuntu, pride in what we do, and solution focused. And last year we introduced excellence and efficiency into our values. We have four strategic objectives. The first is a legislative dispensation aligned to principles of social security. Under this objective, there are really two work streams. One is to look at amendments to the current RAD legislation, and the second is to support the implementation of RAD. Objective two would be to manage the fund's finances and pursue sustainability. Objective three would be our operational one, customer centricity, being effective and efficient. And objective four, of course, is transforming a capacitated institution. This is where our people focus would lie. I think committee members have our APP and they have had copies of the PowerPoint. So I'm not going to read the table to you. But what I will do is I'll focus on the outcome indicator, the column on the left, just to touch on what the targets are and to give some view on why we have it. So the first set of indicators relate to our legislation. So mainly the RAF Act. The reality is that as of today, you still have 90 billion rand which will be paid under the law. And there are places and opportunities where we need to fine-tune it to make the business work better, to allow us to be more efficient, and also to ensure that we deliver better care. Publishing a maximum fee for serious injury assessments is a good thing because it allows us to standardize how we process those payments and therefore how people gain access to the care. Publishing a single medical tariff is very important financially. Via various constitutional court rulings, the RAF has maintained an emergency tariff, which is good. So in emergencies, we know what we will pay, how much, and for. But for non-emergencies, we don't have a tariff. And we therefore have what the court ruled as reasonable. Now, the problem with reasonable is my cotton wool swab and my chair's cotton wool swab may be the same swab, but his is 2 rand, mine is 1 rand, and both of us argued reasonable. For us to assess and adjudicate each line item of a claim takes a long time. So what we want for the tariff, really, like you have on medical fee, is to say, for a particular thing, this is how much it costs, and that's what we'll pay. We then have annual reviews of our tariffs to make sure what we pay emergency service providers is relevant and comparable to what they get paid by other sources. To look at serious injury assessments, the bureaucracy of our law is such that serious injuries must be proven via many steps. Now, in many instances, like if somebody has been amputated, you can actually move straight to accepting it's serious. To send them for doctor's tests to confirm the seriousness of what is visible to all, it is definitely a thing we can find an easy way to deal with. So at this activity, what we're looking for is a set of serious injuries agreed to. So when we see them, we move straight into determining the value of the claim. Number two, be to support our parent department, DOT, with the implementation or the rollout of the RAS legislation. Our next set of targets relate to the finances. The first would be to reduce the deficit and improve sustainability. Every year in September, you will see a headline in English and Afrikaans newspapers that says RAF bankrupt, RAF insolvent, every single year when we submit our financials. And this is true. The RAF has been insolvent since 1981. For 33 years, its liabilities have exceeded its assets. The reason for that on our balance sheet under liabilities is an actuarial provision which basically estimates what you will still have to pay for claims that happened in the past. is a normal practice in many insurance forms. You use it in medical schemes, you use it in pension funds, you also use it for short-term insurance. It doesn't, however, consider what assets we will build at the time in which those liabilities fall due. But because of this, you have a situation where our liabilities far exceed our assets. Of course, we would like to make the institution sustainable, so there are measures in place to try and reduce the deficit. The most important one is to pay claims, is to pay the claims that we have on the book as fast as we can, because then you don't have to provide for them. The cash flow is that to pay claims you need money. That really would be the difficulty. As part of our management of the liability, this used to be set annually by the statutory actuary the FSB appoints to the RAS. What we do now, we have a second set of actuaries too, in fact, who perform it on a quarterly basis, so we can see how these numbers change, why they change, to get a good understanding of where interventions should be placed. To perform an annual review of our records, it's important that we know what we still need to pay. It's important that we check names, surnames, ID numbers, whether claimants are still alive or not. To reduce legal costs, at the moment 21% of our expenditure goes on legal funds in the last financial year. It's reduced nicely from 29%. But we want to reduce this money further, because every rand you don't spend on a claimant, I think, deprives claimants of the benefit of the RAS. Increasing the percentage of direct claims, these are claims that come straight to us. They don't make use of legal services. This program was introduced about 3 years ago, and we are almost at 27% of new claims coming directly. It's very important for us that we continue to do this. Like other public entities in the social security space, you don't use an intermediary. When you claim for UIF, when you claim from COIDA, when you claim from SASA, when you get your grasp, you don't make use of an intermediary. Again, any money spent on intermediaries is money not going to the claims. Want to reduce the percentage of direct personal claims becoming represented. There certainly are different influences which convert a direct claim. On one hand, it would be the marketing of intermediaries. Say, no, don't use double directly. Use our services. We may get you more or we may get you faster. Second one would be there may be elements of fraud and corruption where people are touting, both inside and outside of the RAS. The third one, it may be a reflection of whether we are performing or not. Because if we went to a claimant and said, come to us directly, we'll assist you, we care for you, but we drag our feet, the claimant can actually basically get frustrated and then move to a lawyer in the hope it will go faster. So measuring this target and trying to reduce that number is something which is very important for us. And of course, we look at the three reasons. Managing our operational costs is important. Reducing the number of risks of execution. In a little while, we'll come back to the committee and we'll talk about our annual report. And this topic of risk will come in. So basically, a risk is a demand for payment immediately. The RAS is caught in a catch-22. The PFMA says you've got 30 days to make a payment. The PFMA says you've got 30 days as an entity to pay a court order. But the court processes say after the court rules, payment falls due immediately. And there are many who want the money immediately. They're not prepared to wait for 30 days for payment. So writs are issued, the sheriff is activated, and there are these costs. But it's in our interest as the RAS to look carefully at the legal cost bill before we process the payment. We will talk about it in our annual report, but there's a great amount of money we save by looking carefully at the bill. But unfortunately, the more time we take on that step, the more you see the risk come into play. But we want to reduce this. And I can confirm to the committee it's reducing annually. Then accurate forecasting of the prevalence of accidents. It's important that road safety plays an important part in our business. It's important that we know what happens, what causes crashes, so we can intervene. Because if we make our road safer, there will inevitably be fewer claims that they already have to pay. So we've run this for the first time last year. We want to do it annually. We have a small actuarial department in RAS, and they basically look at the prevalence of crashes and try to forecast it, considering population growth, car sales, and fuel sales. What we want to get in the future is actually being able to identify roads which are hotspots, the time of day, the time of the year, and so forth, so we know how to advise interventions. At an operational level, reducing the number of open claims is a priority. Those people who claim from the RAF should not have to wait unnecessarily for payment. Reducing the turnaround times for claims, this measures efficiency, is broken up into two parts. It would be the simple claims, supplier, those are the medical claims, funeral claims and undertakings, and then the more complex loss of income and general damages. The one is more invoice-driven and the other involves experts and estimations and a litigation process which can be some time. To improve or expand on our hospital service center, introduce information collection agents. These are MOUs we sign with different entities, departments, municipalities who have access to information, accident information. The more information we have, the easier it is for us to intervene. An example, as I mentioned, the hippopotamus crash. Within an hour, our team knew about it because we had an ICA with the Limpopo Transport Department. Reducing the prevalence of litigated cases, this talks to direct claims. As you have more direct claims, there are fewer litigated ones. Improving the fraud conviction rate, it's important to root out fraud. Engaging claimants at our roadshows. This number increases in increments of 5,000 annually. It may not look like the most exciting target, but the truth is, 4 or 5 years ago, our business was not to engage or to meet or to talk to a claimant. So it is important we continue to put ourselves out there. We will also get very candid feedback about our service. In the last year, chairperson members of the committee, 3 targets were added. They relate to IT services, implementing claim system enhancements. We have a very old claim system, and our CIO is part of the team that worked on e-filing, and the idea is to get an electronic workflow with automated controls. System availability and uptime is a measure of how systems are up to allow us to work. And then the third one is increasing the percentage of direct claims settled. It's one thing to generate direct claims. It's another thing to service them, but ultimately you want to prove that you've paid them. The last set of targets, community members, is to reduce our vacancy rate by increments of 2% annually, to perform the performance assessments, to recognize employees, and then, of course, to contribute to social and economic transformation, EE, as well as our employment equity fields. It's important with a workforce of over 2,200 people that these priorities come through. If we move on to the financial projections, committee members should know that the APP was prepared from the second half of last year. Based on forecasts, some of those forecasts we've now seen, so we know our actual 2030-40 spend. But just to talk to some of the salient features, at a revenue level, we project that our income will increase by 2%. We assume 3% as GDP, but we have seen fuel efficiency improvements of a percentage point. So we assume our total revenue will grow by 2%. What we've seen in recent years is that petrol consumption, that number of liters, has actually gone down. Now, this has an immediate impact on the RAF because it will affect our revenue. The fuel levy is increased by 8%, I think 8 cents a litre. One just needs to remember that the 8 cents on a bigger base continues to become a smaller percentage. 96% of our fuel levy in our assumptions and forecasts is used on paying claims, and in 2013-14 this was in fact the case. Productivity exceeds our available cash, and claims expenditure is limited to cash that we have. From 2014-15, members of the committee, cash is a material constraint. Our ability to process, to prepare claim payments, outstrips the money we get as the fee levy. Aware that administration, we use CPI as guided by National Treasury, but 2 years ago, National Treasury bought into a decision of the board to transform the RAF and allocated more admin expense as well as more personnel costs. The budget, because you needed these as inputs to produce more, and we're seeing the fruits of that investment. So for admin and personnel expenditure, you have CPI, plus then you have a productivity increase. And the provision for claims incurred, the big number on our balance sheet, reduces slightly as we pay more claims. As soon as claim payment slows, the number increases. I won't go through the table, Chair, I just want to touch on a few points. It is in our APP. We've got the financial year. 2014 is the assumed base. Then 15, 16, 17 would be what we have. You'll note the fuel levy increases as per the model to 26 billion by 2017. You will then note that investment income shrinks, and it shrinks because our cash holdings reduces. And under claims expenditure, you will see a very big number, which is made up of two parts. It's made up of actual claims, that's 22 billion, and then it's made up of a change in the provision on our balance sheet. As that provision grows, you need to add that to your expenses. So you see a 9 billion addition, then a 6 billion, then you have another 8 billion, a 10 billion increase in the provision over the period. But the point I really want to make to the committee is simply, we have our revenue growing. Our claim paid can't increase as fast as we would like by way of productivity because it's limited to the cash you have. So you will see that the claim paid line increases very moderately over time. And then, of course, we have other expenses, and there's an assumed deficit for the year. If you look at our challenges here, there are quite a few of them, and we cover them in the ADP in the narrative. But I think the main challenges we face at the moment would be fourfold. The first one is what is known as the backlog. We call it the open claims. 5 years ago, there were over 500,000 or 450,000 open claims. We reduced that number to 198,000 as at the end of March. But it's still a lot of people who need to have their claims paid. When you look at our turnaround time targets, members of the committee will see that it does take a long time for the complex claims to be paid. So we have measures in place to target the older ones. You will see on our performance, as we clear the backlog, as we go for the older ones, our turnaround times will appear worse. It's because those are very old claims we are paying. There are focused backlog initiatives, and the fact that it's reduced by almost half in the last few years shows that these initiatives are working. We supplemented it with outsourced claims administration against a fixed fee. It's one of our new projects. And then, of course, the strict performance management for staff with frequent monitoring which takes place daily, weekly, monthly, and quarterly. The second challenge we have is to receive and to pay direct claims. This wasn't the nature of the RA's business. So there was no direct claim team, there was no direct unit. It was a program start and we generated them. But we want to pay them. So what we've done in response to this challenge is establish dedicated units in each of our processing centers. We've got a business process, SOP, for direct claim processing. We've appointed mobile RAF officers to help in gathering information because you often need ID, copies of IDs, accident reports, and so forth. And we're beginning to see the fruits of the labor, that we're beginning to pay these claims. The panel of attorneys is something certainly which is a challenge for us. It's been a challenge for the RAA for many years. Our mitigation is fourfold. The initial panel of attorney tender was challenged. The supplementary tender was cancelled. The final tender, as directed by the Eastern Cape Courts in March, was issued and is being adjudicated. And there's ongoing resistance from outgoing panelists. I think, allow me, committee members, just to give you some background on this panel. The panel of attorneys are those attorneys the RAF uses to defend itself in claim litigation. In 1999, a tender was issued, and about 110 firms were appointed. In 2006, another tender was issued to try and refresh the service level and to bring in a wider pool. That tender was only awarded in 2008, and in 2010, a service level was signed. So in 2010, when a 2-year service level was signed, there were two sets of attorneys really in our panel, the 99 and the 2006. The SLA expired in 2012, and there has been ongoing resistance to renewing or replacing or refreshing that arrangement. The truth is, number one, the service has run for a very long time. Number two, we currently have 66 lawyers in the old panel, and we pay over R1 billion a year in fees. In fact, our panel was paid 1.7 billion rand in 2013-14. Now, we need service levels, we need a short-term contract, we need penalties, we need the ability to manage performance, and we definitely need quality. So this has been a challenge for us. We anticipate it will continue to be a difficult process of change, but it's very important that the RAF has in place a panel of attorneys governed by a fixed-term contract with service level, with penalties, and the ability to manage them. Our fourth channel challenge chairperson is the main one. It's really around that. The revenue, as I mentioned, is derived almost entirely from the fuel levy. It's grown, our revenue has grown below CPI, but the fuel levy has increased above CPI. So the 8 cents a litre increase National Treasury gives them is a big increase. It's above CPI. It's 8 cents or 96 cents a litre. Our statutory actuary projects the unpaid claims, the provision, to be worth 97 billion rand. Operational productivity has improved, and you saw the 47% increase in payments, which is causing a disjuncture between our expenditure and our income, and is compounded by this provision. So the problem statement, ladies and gentlemen, is that increased settlements as a result of improved productivity have seen our cash holdings reduce. In 2013, we had 6.1 billion rand in reserve, reduced to 2.5, and by the 30th of June it was 1.3, and at this point we are paying claims according to the fuel levy we receive on a monthly basis. The solution is to ensure that the fund has sufficient monies to settle claims. But it's a lot. Active engagement with the Minister of Transport, DOT, National Treasury have taken place. Continuous monitoring of our cash flows daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly takes place. Our actuarial teams continue to perform various forecasts to show what the expenditure trends. We also implemented cash flow management strategies, which see us, one, reducing our own expenditure as an institution, looking at our demand management plan, looking at our centers, but then also looking at how we stagger payment. The difficulty, if you prepare 2.5 billion rand for payment each month, but the cash you have is 1.7, who gets paid? So who gets into the 1.7? And that really is a difficult act for us to manage. And this is where we are likely to see items like RIT, share of costs, end of costs go up, as the understanding for those who want their money may not be as great as we need. And of course, we therefore need to manage the negativity related to that. But the definitive solution, Chairperson, looking into the long term, is simply to appreciate that for 33 years, the arrangement we have today, financially and socially, is not as sustainable. When you have a liability of 97 billion rand that you know will fall due anywhere between 5 and 8 years in the future at a frequency you can't control, when your income is fixed and the need for your services continues to grow, then there's a need for us to look at something that will solve this. So the definitive solution in our view is the implementation of RAD. It's based on the 2000 Special Commission recommendations and Cabinet approved policy of 2011. It's defined social benefits, a no-fault scheme, scheduled payments which will help the cash flows, and rehabilitation. As I draw to a close, Chair, cognizant of the time you have given us, I think I'm at half an hour now. Allow me just to share with the committee. In 2012 July, am I not on half an hour? I hope I'm on half an hour. I'm sure I'm half an hour. I'm going to close. In 2012 July, the board had a meeting. The board is relatively new. They called all the executives and managers into a venue in Pretoria and basically said, look, the legacy of the RAF is known. Performance needs to change. The expectation of us is that we perform and that we make people's lives better. So various steps, decisions, and plans are implemented to transform the institution. So what you see over the last 2-3 years, and I'll focus really on 2011-12, which would be the baseline, and then 2013-14, which would be the current. You basically see this transformation taking place at Barreiras. So in 2011-12, our strategic plan was not aligned to the APP, and there were some errors in our APP. Today we have a strat plan and APP and scorecards which are aligned to each other. The fuel levy income has grown from 16 to 20 billion. Our staff count has grown from 1,800 to 2,200. The number of open claims we still need to pay reached a high of 279,000 and has reduced to 232. It's different to the number of 198 I mentioned. This includes legal costs we have today. The settled claims, the ones we finalized, have grown to 240,000 in the last financial year. Claim payments have almost doubled to 22 billion. Legal costs have shrunk from 29% to 21%. as a percentage of our expenditure. It's not insignificant if you consider how big our expenditure is. The number of reopened claims, which is an asset test to see if we are just closing to meet nice targets, has dropped significantly from 41,000 to 14,000. We now have a national footprint, which we didn't have 3 years ago. In terms of direct claims, we've gone from 1 in 8 to almost 1 in 3, and we will continue to promote direct claiming. Ramp on the Road is introduced, and we've seen 20,000 people in the community. The number of risks, which I described earlier, has reduced from 11,000 to 5,500. Our call center, which really consisted of 5 people, has grown to 20, and almost 250,000 telephone calls were answered. What is good with our call center is that our average abandoned calls has dropped to 3.9%, from 33, or 1 in 3, a year before. Fraud arrests continue to take place, and we've seen this maintained at 478. We went from unqualified audit to 2 clean audits. Our internal audit findings are increased. This is something we appreciate. It's a proof of our testing of internal controls. And I'm pleased to say with the board members here that on a quarterly basis, at least half of these findings are resolved continuously. So this actually empowers us for the AG's audit, which comes annually. Risk maturity improved, as I mentioned. And there are various units which fell away in the RAF, which stopped existing, or which needed to be established, which we have since established. A good example for committee members is the one called verification and validation. This is the step when claims are lodged, you need to register it. And in some areas, we didn't have it any longer. As I close, just to say that we are a public entity, we have a role in implementing the NDP. The areas which relate to our business are threefold. The first is healthcare. The NDP speaks about improving the quality of public healthcare and lowering the cost of private healthcare. Our role really is in post-crash care, maintaining the emergency and non-emergency tariffs. The NDP speaks of social protection, speaks about the implementation of comprehensive social security, speaks about reforms providing balance and broadening coverage. This would be where the RAS policy comes in. It also speaks about short-term focusing and broadening coverage, and that's where Amendments to the RAF Act would apply. And then, of course, corruption is mentioned in the NDP, strategy of enforcement, prevention, and education, and that applies to our food management program. And then, to a lesser degree, we also have a role as an employer with vacancies and employment equity targets, as well as our BE spend. Members of the committee, I am closing. The APP and Strat Plan are a continuation of a current strategy centered around reducing the backlog, promoting direct claims, improving our efficiency, and effecting legislative change, maintaining capacity, people and processes and infrastructure, contributing to national priorities. Great effort is and will be placed on fulfilling the APP and Strat Plan. In 2011-12, we only met 53% of our APP targets. In the subsequent years, we've met 83%. And as an institution, we'd like to keep doing that and to lift that number. Addressing challenges and risks is integral to our continued success. And preventing the catastrophic social economic effects of accidents in our society is indeed a priority we're focused on as areas. And it's proposed, therefore, Chairperson, that the PCOT motor presentation to support our efforts contained in our plan, and we will gladly take any questions you may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Watkins. Colleagues, there we are. The presentation, very articulate, very elaborate. Let's hear discussion. Oh, it's good. Let's hear Ivana Lezo. It was very straightforward. I see no hands. Thank you very much. let me start with Honorable Keta and then Honorable Defectors, Honorable Chair, Honorable Malawi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to thank the department and the CEO for giving us the presentation. I have to say, on the one side, I'm a little bit on the disappointed side. I really expected for us to get a little bit more information here today, specifically on an issue that I've been driving for a couple of days, even last week, seeing that we see a lot of reports in the media about rats, and that we've only got a very little one-liner here. So from that side of it, I feel that if it's not possible, I do understand that we're dealing here with a whole road accident fund document today, but that we at least have a meeting that is set aside, even if the entire day on a Friday, that we can deal with it. Especially with all the media reports that is in the media. That is a great concern to me. Just to go to, I've just got a couple of questions. Specifically if we go to slide number, it would be, sorry, slide 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Slide number 5, we talk about hospital-based offices. I would like to always get to the ISO question of the 5 W's. Who is doing it? Where is it done? When is it done? You know, those processes. At the hospital, who is doing it? Is it people that are based there? Is it the department itself? At what stage is it done? Then also on, there was the aftercare. I would like the 120,000 people that are currently getting aftercare. Just maybe just elaborate a little bit on that. I would just like to get some more information on that. If I go on to the contingency, just on the contingency fees, what is the possibility of actually aligning the Road Accident Fund Act with the Contingency Act? I'm going to ask you a last question here, and that is specifically in the business execution. If I look at the report, we're saying 2009, 14.9 million, okay? 2010, 23.2 million. Now that doesn't look to a decrease to me, it looks like an increase to me. 2011, 26.2, 2012 it came down to 22.1. So it's definitely not decreasing every year, but the execution, the money spent, and the years, the expenditure of the year. Now what is of great concern there as well, is if we look at the amount of money that is spent, unfortunately I have quite a bit to do with court orders myself in the last couple of years, and when it comes to execution, it will not be done immediately as it is stated, but to actually get done, you get at least 14 days to do the payment. And if we have a look at the money that is spent, and it's the average of what claims we are paying out, the average of claims, I mean, we could, just with what we're spending on sheriff costs, we could have saved another 1,200 claims on average. So that is just, that's also a concern. Then, just on the IT side, from the IT side, I'd like to know, when we talk about an automated system, how do we talk automated? Like we are talking with a normal medical, like with a medical bill where you've got your, what is it, IC code. Yeah. Where you've got your code, you push it into a machine and it will come out. So this man has got had a head injury and he's got a broken arm. So is this what we're trying to achieve? That at the end of the day, a computer is going to be the one to decide what amounts are being paid, or is that what we're looking, in the IT system to achieve? Then, just on the panel, when it comes to assessing where the bulk work is done, who is actually doing the assessing? Do we have administrators? Do we have legal teams? So that we can see what is happening there. I know Chair's looking at me. I've got a whole lot. Maybe we should have had 2 days to dance for this. can I ask one last? Okay, just in terms of the unpaid claims. No, let me go to this one rather. On the fuel levy, are you receiving the fuel levy on an ongoing basis at the same time? you know, you look at bad debts, you look at debts, you look at accounts not being paid in time. Is this due to the inconsistency of the time frame of receiving the fuel levy? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think for sure all of us would be keen to want to discuss the RABs. Maybe what we may want to agree upon is that before we go on research, we make an arrangement that on a particular day, we get REF to come and just brief us on the RABs, despite the fact all of us for sure are aware that it is still at Executive Council level. And we're just reading it in the newspapers, but because all of us are very keen to want to know what is happening, if as a committee we would agree that to save time, it will be important that we give ourselves time to just get to know what is entailed. And I'm not sure, when is the closing date for public hearings? Is it possible that we can wait for the public hearings to close, then maybe we have our own as a committee, if that is agreeable? Madam Craig, Madam Kate.
Honourable Chairperson, I support your proposal, but let's wait for the public comments to close, and then we organise the workshop. That workshop. It must be necessary to take his part that we must get information on that. I had the question around that check also myself, so I appreciate your suggestion. Thank you.
Okay. Honourable
Keith? You know, I've said that, but I also think that for the public hearings, we don't want to read about the news that wants the public hearings to take place. So we can please just also have communication of when is this taking place and where it is taking place, so those members that want to participate can actually participate.
Honourable
Chair, I support your proposal, but I just wanted to suggest, I'm very keen, I agree that we must have a dedicated meeting on this new legislation. But I would like to suggest perhaps to have a briefing from the entity with the detail. I don't understand, I'm saying should it as soon as possible, that when the process is happening on public hearings and so forth, we're at least a little bit more informed. You know, some of these things are happening, we as a committee should be a little bit more informed and we're not, type of thing. So I'd like to perhaps suggest, if possible, that perhaps be briefed. We don't want to interfere with their process, it's very important. And then we get briefed, and then we can almost follow through on the side of watching as a bystander, if that's possible. Because I'm not sure what the process would then be. They'll come back here, and perhaps we might have another bystander.
If you have to come back here.
Yeah, and another bystander hearing.
Yeah.
And I'm saying by then we should be very professional. Not as proficient as the panel up there, but certainly be a lot more informed. And so if I may request, if that would be possible, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Jefferson. I quickly agree with the latter speaker. I think we must do that before the closing of the public hearing, because we are even close, like tomorrow, at least tomorrow, there will be our area in Lipopo with Giani, and the day after tomorrow, there will be at Kukwane. That's all. The people that are following don't know about these things. And we find, as the member of parliament, in the protocol committee, we know nothing about this. So it is good to be brief so that we can answer the constituency.
Honourable members, this is a process which is happening at the Executive Council level. That is what you must understand. It still has to come back to us and we'll still make public hearings. Such that if individuals feel like going to what the executive is doing, it is okay as members of the public to go there. But we'll still have our bite, we'll still have our public hearings happening, which actually will take into consideration. And that is why I was saying we don't need to interfere with what is happening at the executive level, but have our own that will be able to guide us. Because sometimes we may be influenced by what is happening at the executive level. And I'm of the opinion that we are overseeing the executive. We don't need to be influenced by the executive. Honourable Ramasaka.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. I was in fact going to suggest that we should wait for our process, because our process, once the legislation draft bill is presented to us, we will follow parliamentary process. And we will hear the public around it. We don't necessarily have to make a decision there, but we want to participate in the executive process, because that's the executive process. It's not a complete process. The complete process is only the signing off that will be done through this committee. So therefore, I have some difficulties about the briefing that we want to have before the October date. I don't see the value of that for us. But however, I'm not suggesting that members who want to participate in various provinces where they want to participate in the education process, they should do that without necessarily saying this is a community process. It's not a, it's a two different story here that we're talking about. So I just want us to draw the line between that and say we would embark on the active participation process as the committee was the bill is presented to us. That is the process that we would then call the department, not only the entity, because the entity report to the Department of Transport. And Transport Department is the one that makes that this the law to us. For the thorough briefing, we'll call them in. It will be supported by the agency for that particular briefing before even going to the public process.
Can we agree, before I acknowledge Honorable Simande, can we agree that as we're proposing, we will request from the department, the entity, to come to us sometimes in October so that they can be able to just put a glimpse, it's like a hawk's eye glimpse into what RAS is all about to the committee. And then we will have a proper procedure once the bill has been brought to Parliament, because the bill actually, in terms of the parliamentary program, is supposed to be in this, I think in this, before the end of the financial year.
In terms of the procedure, as Mr. Lakhani explained, the bill has not been introduced at Parliament. The Department of Transport is solving. When the bill is signed off, it will be referred to not only this committee but also to the Select Committee. Only then will the first meeting of the bill be scheduled. And because it's legislation, it will not be rushed. So there will be ample time for information sharing, for interaction with the department on the content of the law. Then the committee will make a decision, obviously, to invite public comment, which will take place after the first briefing. And then there will be public hearing, and that will also, it's not the process that I rush, it will take time. There will be a time for the department with supporting entity to clarify issues on that. So normally, unless that bill has been referred to the committee in terms of 2149, there won't be necessarily an introductory briefing.
Yes, I agree on the procedural aspects in terms of what is given to us as legislation and legislative data. Thank you very much. Honourable Freitas?
Thanks, Chair. Just a few questions. Thank you for the presentation. The first is you talk about the personalisation. If you just unpack that, because some information is certainly new to me, and as a road accident fund victim myself, I've had no experience of that. Then the next question is, in the presentation, sorry, these things are numbered, these pages, it talks about where you're going to made the business operation accessible, from what I understand, can pop up centres. And the presentation said that over 25,000 people, 220,000 calls were responded by a call centre, etc. And then it talks about an RAF on the road. Interactive 20,000 claims and settled 161 million in claims. Over what period was this? And am I correct in saying that these are relatively minor claims? Because you're talking about 20,000 claims of 166 million. They talk about a few thousand per claims. So if you just talk to us a little bit more about that. And then the other question is talking about there's no heading here, the markers of change is the heading of this page, where it talks about, which is great, having a clean audit in 2013-14, but yet it talks about internal findings, internal audit findings, 338. I'm trying to understand how that works. If you could explain how it is that we've got a clean audit, but yet there were over 300 findings. And I think that's it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chair, Dr. Watson. Thank you for the presentation. My first question would refer and speak to page 6, where you have indicated that some new customer service centers have been opened, which we welcome in anticipation of a better and more efficient system. Could you also elaborate on the scheduled new offices? Because certainly in this rollout process, one would anticipate the opening of new offices. So could you also give us an indication of the further rollout of new offices? My next question would refer to page 9. And just an opinion, if I do the calculations there of about 20,000 claimant and the collector figure of 376 million, which comes to about an average of 18,300, will you see that as an adequate compensation for the type of average injuries that you have experience of? Then on page 19, I also had a look at the annual performance plan, and I see that there's a difference in what you offer as the income and expenditure estimates on the financial projections between the annual performance plan and in this presentation. In that, on the annual performance plan, you indicate the revenue from non-exchange transactions, net fuel levies, on this presentation being 2315003, whereas in the annual performance plan, it's 2352981. But then the even bigger difference when we get to the expenses, where on the annual performance plan it indicated as 16,590,223 compared to this presentation where it suddenly jumped to 31,323,344. Then I would also like to know, in looking at the implications of the current situation of a huge deficit, financial deficit with the current RF dispensation, what is the strategic intention and idea going forward with perhaps, which I know we'll talk about in a separate meeting, but certainly the current deficit would have an implication on the fuel levy. So how would the fuel levy then feed the new RAPs as well as address the deficiencies, financial deficit of what we leave behind? And then I believe on my second question, Chair, just that we might also get a schedule of all the public hearings. I think it's important for this committee to at least know when and where these public hearings would be. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let me start with Honourable
Robert. Okay, I'm going to come this way.
Oh.
You don't grab me.
I was still thinking. Chair. Chair, quickly, thank you very much, Chair, for... I also appreciate the presentation. On the slide that speaks to, I think it talks about the key challenges. Mine is not just in the numbers. I just wanted to find out whether the backlog that you talk about, which is a 97 billion, has to do with the backlog that is suggested here. Is it the same amount of figures that we're talking about? And just to find out how old, what are we talking in terms of the year when you talk the backlog issue? What is the stretch of years? And linked to that question is the issue of payment. What if you have a backlog of that nature, and of course scheduling payment with a meager income of 20 billion from the levy, what then becomes the criteria of the disbursement of payments? Is it informed by the years or informed by magnitude? So what is that informs that particular payment? I take note about the tender and the problems that explained there. Doctor, what is not clear to me is you also mentioned the short-term maternity that has to be utilized. Now, does the short-term come from the 66 or the from 110? Or is it another set of short-term maternity that you make a reference to? And I think the issue about going forward, the issue about the payment, is a matter that probably we need to engage and also understand your kind of strategy. Understanding the responsibility and the government responsibility here and the fund itself. But the issue about the income confined to this one item, and the projection going forward, and the accident increasing, the crashes increasing, there is going to be the challenge of the strategy to manage that particular. So conversation is needed with yourself leading it in terms of what would then constitute what in terms of going forward for that particular payment. Then Chair, I think one question was already addressed. There was the issue about the ATP, alignment of ATP with the presentation. There was some little bit of figures, but I think the colleague has already mentioned the figures in terms of clarifying that particular aspect. But the 21% legal cost to mention, the 225 days target that you put in terms of the APP going forward. Maybe if you just explain that a little bit. It seems not to actually get it. If you can just educate us there around that particular issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Sibande.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know my English time will come because you're not teasing me any much. I never had the opportunity to talk. But it's okay.
So if you are playing, it depends what type of match you are playing. There will be injuries. If it's boxing, you get knocked out, you are done.
Okay. So let me come to the presentation. But nevertheless, touch there and there. See, first one, which is worrying me, which I believe that this is worrying factor. But before that, I want to comment something to a committee. Chairperson, I was impressed when most of the members were mentioning about the public hearing, because normally what is used to happen, we talk about public hearing. We, members here, at the end, it was defeated somewhere. We reasoned that people were never consulted. Why now we're raising this public? And we acknowledge that this is public hearing. We must note that, I'll remind you when those days come, where some people distance themselves from any argument. Normally, it's not happening. But let me proceed to my question. And what is worrying me to the presenter? You see, there's something which we must stand up and rectify it as soon as possible, before the sunset. Unfortunately, I don't have pages in the slides which was given to us. I wanted to go to the slides step by step about the thing of the doctors, the lawyers. If you can open there, I'll be happy. The thing of the lawyers. You see, Chairperson, what is worrying me is this, the plan of the lawyers. And as we are here, it might have had there are people from the lawyers as well. We must put it clearly that some of help us as well, some of the outdated laws to be amended. Because I see no reason why the people are resisting to go out. Why you know, this, you were saying that some papers say, or some people are saying that the IRS is bankrupt. What are they going to produce? The question which you must ask is, what are the contributing factors which make the IRS to be bankrupt? It's not about the paying of these lawyers, paying for what? Because the people who are injured are laying there on the street, and the money is going to the irrelevant people. Help us so that we can amend laws to be taken out. Because if it was us as politicians, we would be on top of the situation to top all these things. That is what we need. About those people who wanted to be there, the God's father, I mean, forever and ever, amen. I don't think that is correct. That is the first one. Second one, that I said, please, the issue of the special commission. May please assist us. What were the recommendations about these people? Because if there were some recommendations, let us implement them. If they were not being implemented, let us implement them. Because the sexual commission was put by cabinet there to assist us about investigation that were the problems. These are some of the contribution factors which are affecting us. And then also, which is worrying me, you see, coincidental Chairperson, I think one day about this thing of the ethos and the like about the issue, because some people they've got a dream that we must take an ethos and put it to fuel levy. If it's affecting REF, simply, if it's affecting the road excellence fund, and then how much do we anticipate are we going to pay for fuel levy? To some of the people, they take it just for granted that some people are having an appointment to do what to do. Because what is the key elemental thing? We have seen as committee, I don't want to regret my time in office, whereby we put everything, put everything which is going to affect us. If it's affecting now, the rest is affected. Because in their slides, time and again, it comes out that the fuel levy is causing a problem. But if you take to pay for each one, I think that's luxury. Pay as you go. The people must pay ourselves. Because we must assist it, because the problem is what? How to fund the info for the rest? And then also a certain thing, if you can be assisted. One of the, if I can recall my mind very well about the sexual recommendation, we had a challenge whereby these poker lawyers. What I'm recommending, number one, let the rest expose them. And those people who doesn't want to go out, expose them. So that we know that this law company doesn't want to go out, this law doesn't want to go out. And then another contribution factor which was affecting your budget, the claims of intentional. You know what was happening? Some people were cooking. And then they come here, visit as tourists, and they cook the accident, and then they expect it to be paid, not in rent, but with the foreign currency. Like now, I will put an example, how is the rent affected? Then the person claiming bills. Because that's what I believe when you are saying, when you talk about backlogs and some of the claims which were not old, which are very old, then help us. If there are such cases, we better know that how many cases are in that category so that we can review them and see what to do. We are the sovereign country, not going to any individual. So we must take our own decision, not the person to come there and come and take money and go away. That's why then some of the laws for these lawyers, I believe, that's why some of these lawyers don't want to go out. Because this is a chain, it's how it's going. At the end, we point the finger to the people who are waiting for the department or to listen to the entity, while the problem is not with the entity, it's with us outside there who are creating some problems. So, myself, is that those are the things which I wanted to bring. Just imagine, lawyers being paid over that, a billion rand. How much is a billion? What am I going to encourage as well? You see, last one, I will come to the second part. This person, you recall very well, before the new dispensation, which was alleged, that some people were signing contracts of the lease. They were leasing maybe the Rapid Stadium, for example, which is 1 rand per year, for more than 50 years. That's happening. So we must avoid those things. Because if it's politician, it's corruption. But if it's them outside there playing there, it's not corruption. It's supposed to be there. Those are the things which are supposed to be protected in order to make it strong, that this to work. So I'll put there, but if the second part, But so it's separate and subject of corruption. You see, but from the commentary, you spoke about the issue of the this auditor general thing. You see, that's why I'm going to request and help you touch it somewhere, if you can elaborate, because some people, they thought that is secret. It's a secret. Because you put it there, we welcome it, because you indicated. Because the auditor general, at the end, is having some comments. It doesn't just say clean audit, clean audit. It must have a comment. So that you take us on board that after those comments from the auditor general, what have you done so much? The key fundamental thing is that how do you respond to the issues which were raised by auditor general? I think they were on the right track. But Chairperson, Ngiyabonga.
Ngiyabonga, honorable, honorable Tseko. Ngibona ukuthi ngathi umoya uyangena. So ngathi let me just allow it. And I'll say hallelujah. Honorable Tseko.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just three comments, no questions. Let me first welcome the presentation by the delegation, as well by the CEO. Chairperson, I heard and also congratulate you on your green audit. It is easier for us to vouch for anything when you disclose that information to us. Next, I was having a concern around what was highlighted by the presenter, that there are those accident victims who do not get their claims paid because they do not meet the necessary requirements of the scheme. What is your plan to make sure that the mechanism in place to make sure that at the end of the day, one who has suffered gets what is due to him or her? I also have something to say around the issue of your physical infrastructure. I see in your presentation that you are there in the big cities and metros, and you have customer service centers in some of the areas. I am worried about the place that I know. Not that I'm not worried about others, but I'm thinking of the distance between East London and Montfrey, and East London, Port Elizabeth. What can be there so that the people in those areas get the necessary service that they may require from you? I also support your campaign of rough on the roads, but you must monitor and evaluate the campaign. You must also not forget to use another relevant platform that I may suggest, our territory of government, because those people are very close to the people. At least there's organized local government associations like SALGA, and also houses of traditional leaders, because those are just service providers that you may not pay, but they will take the information to the people. I also had a question around the time frame. How much time does it take one for his on a direct line? Normally, when all the required information is there, how much does it take one for his or her pain to be settled? Let me check. I want to support any initiative that will result in the cutting of the middleman, because a lot of our people have been victims of other things that I will not mention now. But any initiative that will result in the cutting of the middleman, that will promote direct gains to the scheme, I support that. Thank you, sir.
And thank you for the presentation from the CEO of the party. So I
appreciate your presentation this morning, because most of the presentation, it shows that RAF was going down. Then after you implement COVID strategies, now RAF is starting to be stabilized. Look at the service perceptions that you have. There is a lot of improvement there. And also the strategies which you applied, and also the key challenges which you are meeting. You can see the solutions to this RAF. It's a good word, Dr. Watson. But I have a few questions, because it shows that about 90% of RAF now is, you can see, it's only the bedrock of 97 billion which is net. It's a challenge, but most of the things you are running them very well. But my problem is when you again take the RAS as a immediate solution. While I read since I heard this thing on the media, but when I checked it, I found there's a lot of the contradiction in terms of the constitutional rights of the people. But as we are going to be presented with the day of RAS, I will have so many questions which I need clear in terms of the constitutional mandate. The other thing which I'm concerned is about this direct settlement which you made for about 80,000, if we divide it by the amount you said as a settlement. Imagine somebody had an accident, maybe because I was a chief traffic officer and I'm a qualified lawyer. You see, just imagine somebody who had an accident and he's in April, he's in the wheelchair, he's been settled with 18,000 only, one off. What happened to that person after that 18,000? So I think you must also look this in conjunction with the mandate of social responsibility as the constitution, as the act itself. So the other things which I wanted to know is about the resistance of the panel for attendees. What is the main reason of that resistance? Is it a valid reason for them not to go out of the office? Again, I wanted to know about this short-term contract of the lawyers. How are we going to manage the party head cases for those short-term lawyers? Because if they have a case that's not yet finished, are you going to transfer the case to another short-term lawyer, and which will need time to read the documents, transfer of the files, which is more expensive for the lawyer to transfer the files to another lawyer that you know. They to produce a paper, they have to do everything. This will kill the fund. So the other question is about the, you said the fund need to have a sufficient fund to settle the claims. What is your proposal in terms of how to get this fund? Must we add some amount in the petrol, whatever levy, in order to get this fund to settle it? Because this claim needs to be settled. Because people are waiting, some of them are dying before they can get their own settlement, which is very much unfair. So the issue of the bogus claim by the foreigners, as they said, it needs to be managed, you see? And it's going to be worse in terms of the rats. Because the rats, it comes with no fault system. People will come and just speak existence because there's no fault which is needed there. But in terms of rats, they check the wrongfulness of the act before they settle the amount. But with the rats, you should come in. Everybody can just do it intentionally. You can just throw yourself in front of the bus, then you will be claimed because there's no fault committed. So that's the thing we must say. But absolutely, I'm very much happy about you, Dr. Watson. You are trying to save RAF. RAF was going down, then you came with strategy and everything. So continue with that work, doing that work properly. Let's just jump to another thing. We must be slow to implement the RAFs because there are so many concerns in terms of RAFs. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also commend the Chairperson of the Board and the CEO for turning around the institution. It was worrying, of course, and I think the Court was supporting us for that. Firstly, Chairperson, I would like to raise the issue of the fuel link. As we said, So levy, you know, it's not going to sustain RAF. But also remember, there are other programs of government where they want to reduce the crashes, you know, to zero tolerance. So I think RAF have to find other financial options on how they can be able to get some money to test their mandate. So what financial options do you think can be used to do that? The second one, yes, we are worried about these lawyers that take the bulk of the money. And what actions have been taken by RAF regarding those lawyers who do not pay the victims, and all of us can see that there's something very wrong. And are we just leaving to the victim to fight for himself or herself, of which we know they don't even have that capacity, or the government institution? Are we there for their dispute? And then the third one, what should we do as a committee to assist you to cut this middleman? Because it's a very worrying factor for us. Yes, we would want a situation where you pay quickly, but also pay directly to the victim. So what do we need to do as the legislators to be able to assist you in this regard? And the next one is about the good program that we're embarking on, Ref on the Road. I've heard it on many radio stations. I'm from Limpopo, I heard it on 12FM. As my colleague also said, what other strategies are you using to be able to inform people and educate them about RAF? The last one, the last one was that because I was saying in terms of RAF, can't wait for cabinet processes to finish and then we take them from there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Watson. Let me get back to yourself with your team. For sure you will be able to distribute questions and to whoever you believe will be able to be of assistance in this instance. Thank you.
Just maybe talking to close, maybe just to tackle the issue of specifically of women under 60, since she had the question.
Thank you, Dr. Dito.
Thank the Honourable Chairperson. Maybe for the convenience of the Honourable Members, I would like to introduce myself. My name is Maria Detoy. I'm the Deputy Director General for the Department of Transport. I'm also leading the project for the Road Accident Benefit Scheme. And maybe also to provide some clarity, I would like to ensure and confirm that the mandate for drafting legislation, consulting legislation, and also providing necessary briefings to stakeholders remain the responsibility of the National Department of Transport. I would like to confirm without any doubt that I would like to make myself and the department available at any point in time at the convenience of not only this committee, but also the individual members of this committee to provide a full briefing on the Road Accident Benefit Scheme, contents, the policy, what the system and the dispensation would like to achieve, and any technicalities relating to the scheme. I think it is 100% important, Honourable Chairperson, to confirm the fact that this whole process of the Road Accident Benefit Scheme is a process that has been in the public domain and also within the legislative domain for more than a decade. It started off with the Ministerial Commission, the Special Commission, that I know Honourable Frater has often referred to in the past as well. It has been also followed by a RAPS policy that went through a very public consultation process. It also went through the approval of this portfolio committee at all political parties to get approved in 2011 by Cabinet. And this particular piece of legislation, without any doubt, is 100% in line with that particular policy. However, I think this is the critical point. We are, to some extent, even within the Road Accident Fund, composed of new faces and new members. And I believe that it is just to do justice to the system and also the members of the new dispensation to say that you need to be on track. And as politicians, definitely honour the fact that you will be required to answer questions and maybe even have a view on something as important as the RAPS bill. And although I agree with the legislative process that will unfold after its tables in Parliament and so forth, of course there will be provincial hearings still headed by the NCOP and the Portfolio Committee, that is a process that will definitely happen, and we anticipate that. But presently, although it's not even yet within the executive domain, Honourable Chairperson, it's still within the department. And for us, this is a serious change in the lives of the people of this country, because we all utilize the road, whether that be a rural road, an urban road, or a passenger, or a pedestrian. We all are exploited to some extent, and we would like to have the necessary protection. So that is why, even before we now enter into the parliamentary process, we as a department would like to invite comments. We would like to hear from our stakeholders, from the public at large, how do you feel? And as a result, in 2013, and this is just for the information to the committee, in 2013 we went for a public consultation process of the bill. And because of the comments received, we decided that we would also like to finalize the regulations and the rules of, which the board has formulated and drafted. Now, both the bill and the regulations and then the board rules have since been put up for public comment earlier this year. But after an extended period of 90 days, the department decided to go for yet another, a second round, so in total for a third time to go out for public comment. And one of the main reasons was to say that although we had a national a workshop in Centurion where we had a number of questions and also received numerous written comments, we decided that in spite of the fact that it's not necessarily required from a legal point of view, we would like to go for provincial consultations. And through the period of July and August and then September, we have been conducting these departmental workshops in the provinces. And I would be very pleased, Chairperson, to also provide details of those workshops to the members. Specifically with regard to the Western Cape, one of the workshops that are at as well, I think three workshops in the Western Cape, they are still coming. Limpopo has happened, Northern Cape will be at the end of this week. And I believe, Chairperson, although we really try our utmost to cover via the radio, the local radio, and also the local newspapers in every province to give up notice of these sessions, and while it is also not limited to the sessions, I would like to provide from the department side at least the information and clarity on these workshops to the committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Shall I be crisp?
30 minutes.
No, I'll move through the 47 questions, Chair, as soon as I can. Okay, on the first one, no order.
The general has just give you 40 minutes.
I think I will comply this time.
Okay.
On the first point, in the order that it came, I think there has been put covered now. So I'm glad the committee member, the disappointment is up to the address, so we will get more information. On hospitals, we have 83. They are all employees. We have, I can't remember the exact number offhand, but in most we have one employee, sometimes two, depending on the size of the facility. We secure office space with the Department of Health, but then it's our responsibility as the RAF to manage our little office space and to interact with the hospital staff. They are there all, well, they've been there all along. It's grown from 50 in the last 2 years to 83. Our intention is to reach 90. What we've seen, we performed a review just to make sure they are working and to make sure that they are rightly placed. Because there are thousands of hospitals, and a big hospital by itself doesn't necessarily imply you'll see a lot of accident victims. So you want to be at a hospital that's either along a route where there are lots of car crashes or ultimately where rehabilitation takes place. So in some instances, we've actually really looked at the type of hospital we are in. But it's 83 public facilities. And we have a good relationship with the Department of Health, where in some, like in Kimberley, our team and our case manager actually forms part and parcel of the ward, the hospital ward committee. when they do ward rounds and when they examine patients and talk to you guys. So that's very good. It also helps manage fraud. But the intention really is, as soon as an accident has happened, to be in a position to say to the victim, this is the RF, this is what we can do for you, this is how we can help you facilitate the forms, so that you essentially assist as soon as you can. Post-crash care is asked in a few places, but basically post-crash care is what happens literally after crash. So the first phase would be emergency care. And what our responsibility at RAF there is to pay the ambulance fee. It's emergency, via the emergency tariff. The second longer term phase is now when you are discharged, is basically to assist with the rehabilitation. So appliances, prostheses, medicine, right down to nappies in fact, for the quadriplegics who need that sort of thing. It's very seldom mentioned, but we care for about 20,000 patients. They actually do home visits, about 20,000 home visits a year. There are about 4,000 active patients who rely on us. But one of the sad features, and maybe why the other member who spoke of not knowing, is this is not a payout, you know, like it's not compensation. So we pay invoices, but the rider, the impediment to access in our legislation, is we give you a certificate, it's called an undertaking. We basically say we will assist and pay for your medical attention related to your accident going forward. But you must pay that portion of where you are not to blame yourself, and in most instances up front, which essentially bars the poorest of the poor from having access to it. And only those who can afford the copay are the ones who benefit from it. So part of the legislative change, part of the thinking around RAD, is how you remove these barriers to the access. So of that 120,000, those are people who have that certificate. You've got them claiming for medicine, for care, doctors, bills, hospitals. In some instances, we actually get very involved. We can get involved to the point of placing children at special schools. And it's determined a lot by what resources we have and the nature of the payout. On contingency fees, aligning the RAP Act with the Contingency Fees Act, I think the Contingency Fees Act, the courts have found that it applies. It's an act. It applies to us too. So I don't think our act needs to change. What needs to change is the enforcement of the Contingency Fees Act. And you've seen a few court cases where some attorneys are actually found to have exceeded the 25% maximum and the process of payoffs are coming. At this point, it looks like it's specific to those individual claims. But I think in over time, you're going to see more and more claimants realizing or asking how much of their payout did they in fact get and was it limited to 25%. But yes, it's a big percentage. On the number of risks, the number of risks have reduced by count. From, if you just go to the figure, from 11,600 in 2011-12 to 5,500 in 2013-14. The value of the interest is one that fluctuates. It's not based only on the number. It depends on the size of the claim payout. And then if you remember, there was a mora interest, which used to be at the 15.5%. Fortunately, it's dropped to 9. But that's what would drive the payout. And you'd have to pay the interest from when the matter was first brought to the litigation process. So it can actually be a substantial amount of money. So that's where you see the difference. In our financials, when we come back and show the committee, you basically see that the value has gone up, the number is down, but the process saved 900 million rand. And that's our dilemma as RAS. Where do you comply? Do you save money, but then incur what would be deemed fruitless expenditure? Or do you waste money and not have fruitless and wasteful expenditure? So it's an ongoing dilemma, and we'll gladly take your guidance when we get there. On the 14 days, what I can say, when you look at our audit record, you'll see in 2011-12 an unqualified audit. The sore thumb, the stick, was always the fact that we didn't have a process to manage risk. And when we put that in place, we designed it, we implemented it. On average, we can get it turned around for payment in 2 days, if all things are equal. And we do that in most instances. We are, of course, cases where we don't. But that SOP is what transformed our audit opinion from just unqualified to clean, lacking internal control findings. On IT, we won't go into the specifics, but when we say automation, it's automation at different levels. So on one hand is lodgement, just the process of giving us the claim. So that would be like the SARS e-filing process. Our VIO was actually part of that team that did it for SARS. The second part would be around the medical invoices. We pay 1.2 billion rand a year in medical expenses. It's about 112,000 payments. Those ones you can do exactly like a medical scheme. Like you have at your pharmacy, they cash your details, it switches in, switches out, and system rules tell you where it can be paid. At the compensation part, you can automate the workflow, so our team works off the computer, but there will be manual steps. You need an actuarial report, you need a physiotherapist, an OT, and so forth. So it will be, an RAF claim is now processed in 6 seconds like a medical scheme claim. There are elements that may be. But what we must do is move from paper. That has to change. On the panel of attorney, in terms of assisting claims, we have 1,500 people in our claim environment who report to us through our COO, Mr. Balmo. They're responsible for Pillar 1. They're responsible for Pillar 2. They manage the use of the panel, our actuaries, assessors, investigators. There was a point where RAF used to do a lot of the entire process itself. It took through, and more was done by the panel. Very little control, very little value, lots of money. And so we are bringing some of these functions back. So panel management is a unit in all our offices. We then also have various tenders we're issuing. We have our own panel of experts, panel of assessors, panel of investigators to strip out fat from the costs. On the fuel levy, yes, we receive it on an ongoing basis. Our COO knows exactly which day to expect it because there's a sigh of relief when it comes. We do get the money. It's administered by SARS. The only variation we get is the deal rebate. I'm sensitizing committee members, chairperson, through you. Just remember the deal rebate when we talk about our financials. It's going up. In 5 years, it's gone from 1 billion rand to 2.6 billion rand. And that is money that affects, of course, our payment. But we are engaging SARS as well as National Treasury on that administrative process of paying. The briefing on RAFs, I think, Chair, has been covered. Post-finalization, again, is that process, the rehabilitation. And the third part is that our current law prevents some of the neediest people from getting access to it. And there are many doctors who don't want to see an RAF claimant unless you pay. But our law says you must cover the copay, and that is a problem. That really is something that needs to change. But our aim there is to restore you as close as you can be to how you were before the accident. And there's some fantastic examples of people's lives transforming this element. The averages on RAF on the road, I think just to caution committee members, please don't take the number of visitors RAF on the road and divide it by the settlement. We do see on average 1,000 people at an event. But there are claimants, but some would only be in verification. Some would be in identification. So typically you settle between 70 and about 150 claims on a day. The average is a little lower than our average. So for direct claims and for represented claims, our overall average in the last financial year is 104,000 rand per claim payment. For personal claims, that would be compensation, it's 194,000. It's gone up from 138,000 the year before. That's something is concerning. Within that bundle, the income support, the loss of earnings, on average 650,000. Now when we talk equity, this is an important number to remember. Our average taxpayer earns 200,000 rand a year. The average national income in our country is 43,000 rand. The RAF average payment for loss of earnings is 650,000. The question then is who's benefiting? Whose income are you supporting? And that's a barrier to entry, access and equity that we must appreciate and change. Because those who need it the most are getting nothing because they have nothing to lose. Those who have the most, lost the most, and therefore gained the most. And that system is not right. So average, please don't use the straight division. Those are not, every person who comes is not for settlement. On internal orders findings, I think just to provide a committee member with comfort. You have an audit committee, you have a board, you have an audit committee. Then you have management who is responsible for internal controls. You have the chief audit executives who run our internal audit department. They have a plan the board approves. It's a very rigorous internal audit plan. There are many audits. In fact, there's no month we are not audited. So there's always something being checked. And those findings would constitute that number that increases. Those are on our internal controls. As management, we can resolve those. Within 3 months, most are resolved. So by the time the Auditor General comes, they find the control environment that is not in shambles. In fact, the AG can place a great deal of reliance on the work internal audit does. On the CSC roles, the Customer Service Center, we went from not having a province in presence in every province to now having one. We do have the cash issues, we do have cost containment, we do also have to manage our growth. So what we want to do now is bed down those existing centers and determine how we expand further. The committee member who just slipped out asked the question about rural areas. It's fantastic. Even the Eastern Cape is complicated because of the many cities, but we must balance it off against access and affordability. So for now, we want to perfect what we have. The average and rate on the road I've dealt with, the income and the expenditure figures, the committee members are right. It's purely how things change. When we developed the first draft, and this is what I use for my presentation, because we use the same table for the minister, we didn't expect to pay 22 billion rand in a year. And then as that expenditure increases, it throws out the other numbers. So there's no intention to confuse the committee members. It's just timing, okay, because our actual expenditure is far greater. On the deficit, strategic focus on funding, this is a big issue. I mean, one would wish to call the stakeholders in 1981 to say, why did you guys not fund the institution properly? Because now you'd have compound interest over 3 decades to negate that liability. But yes, we have to look at it. We have to decide, can we only give the IRS the money it needs to operate? Or do we want to give it excess money to fund the balance sheet figure, which may not yet have fallen due? And if you give the IRS that money, as important as accident compensation is, could it build a bridge, could it build a school, could it build something else? And that really is a difficulty that the government as a whole must consider. But the member is correct, it's an obligation. The law exists and people are entitled to that payout. It's how you provide the money. On backlog, well, there was one more question on RAS that I've covered. On backlog, what is it? Backlog, to the honourable member, is really just the number of open claims. The number doesn't mean it's bad, because every day we receive new claims. Last year we received 147,000 claims, and we processed those because we reduced the net balance. But we use it as a marker of how much work you still have to pay. We've aged it. 40% of the claims are less than a year old. Sorry, I got it wrong. 40% are more than 3 years old. And then 33%, give or take, are 1 year, and in between would be the 1 and 2 years. So what we've realized is that the bulk of these are old claims, and we need to clear them. It's prior to the law change. This is what's called old act claims. Of the liability, the 97 billion rand liability, about 70 billion of that is just simply the value of those claims on our books. Then the remaining 27 is what we think will still come in, although it's not yet on our book. It's called IBNR. So basically, if we had to close shop today, without a doubt, RAF will have to spend 70 billion on what it has already, not counting what comes in today. On criteria for payment, this is very difficult. I'm glad that the committee members appreciate it. Every claim in truth deserves to be paid. Whether it's a supplier, whether it's a claimant, whether it's a law firm, whether it's the law firm's bill, they all deserve to be paid because the law requires that. If you try and avoid what would be the noisy payment, the unhappy payment, the problem is you will create a situation where people realize you get paid and must make noise. If you try and manage the non-risk, you will see more risk. So it is very difficult for us. We do try to balance it. Have you broken the money down into big in number, supplier claims, as well as then your risk, because those are urgent, as well as then what would be your compensation payments, direct versus representative. So we do have a format, but we limit it to an average. On the current panel, of the 66 old panel, 21 in the new panel. Of income protection for ABS and RAF, yes, it's very difficult. I think committee members, together with DOT, Minister, and National Treasury, need to recognize that one of the important discussions is, can we afford this dispensation? Can we afford the RAF? then can we afford rails? Are they necessary? Yes, they are. But then how do you balance the two? So I agree, this is something I actually, in the RAS project team, are working on the financial estimation, especially as you run down the ramp and introduce RAS. Alignment to our APP, thank you, I think I explained it. 225-day target is really just to say, from the date you get that claim, a funeral claim, a medical claim, an undertaking, to the day you pay, you want it to be 225. Under 225 days, and that's where it fits in. For RAF claims, there are a lot of forms. On a panel of attorneys, there's a comment made, some laws are outdated. The truth is that you have attorneys, you have intermediaries in the RAF environment because you must prove fault, common law fault. If you strip that out and just have social security benefits where you say, if you are injured like this, you therefore are entitled to that, and it will be so much. Then the issue of fault comes out of the dispensation. So it becomes like a grant. If you are eligible, you will get so much. And that really is the shift. So under RAS, you're looking at doing away with that objective. On the Federal Commission, we note the comments made. On fraudsters, I must be honest. Yes, there are fraudulent lawyers. There are fraudulent doctors. There are fraudulent outs, there are fraudulent claimants, and there are fraudulent RAF employees too. Any system where you collect money to pay money, and you prove retrospectively something that happened, you're going to have the risk of fraud. So I must say that fraud is a risk across our business. International claims, we've seen it. It may not be overseas venues. So one of the common places we see these syndicates is in the suit, in fact. So people claim that they were married to somebody, and then they bring them from Lesotho into South Africa to claim, go back. And when you look for the claimant families and support information, you can't find them. So we actually we're working on an MOU with the police officials in Lesotho to look at how we can prove this information sooner through the equivalent of Home Affairs. And the same would be for other neighboring countries. On fuel levies for tolls, that definitely is a point the committee member made, which doesn't need a response. The legal spend of R1 billion, yes. Our panel is R1 billion, it's 1.7. The total legal spend is R4.6 billion. The average claim is 104,000. So the amount of money spent on legal fees is equivalent to funding 46,000 claimants. And that really is where we must look at what is our law achieving and for whom. On the matters of emphasis, yes, there are three. One is the growing concern. Second one was the increase in the percentage of our real expenditure. The number of instances came down, but the percentage went up. The third was just to correct a prior year error. So it is a clean order. There are no compliance findings, no performance findings, no internal control findings at all. On removing barriers to entry, Chair, I'm almost done. Plan to make equitable and promote access, we fully agree with. It's the saddest thing every Saturday morning or Sunday morning to read your Twitter timeline and see the number of people that. And then you look at them and you know that half of them, apart from extending condolences, we may not be able to do anything. Especially when you see crashes with these little kids or passengers in the buses. Or you see a single driver. He may have been driving alone, maybe it's the cause of the accident, but he still has a family. We are dependent on that net income. So it is definitely something I would love for the committee to support, which is go through the process of introducing the removal of fault as soon as we can. Even if we shape, define, and curtail benefits, but let's remove fault. On physical office of the Eastern Cape, we did address the issue. We've expanded, now we need to pause and assess how we get there. But there will always be more towns than there are offices. But we can partner with other entities. National Treasury has encouraged us to partner with UIF and BOINA. We do have transport entities like RTMC, where we could borrow and share spaces and make our footprints bigger. And it's something we should think about. On RAF on the Road, thank you very much. It is a success. We use local government, traditional leaders, when we do RAF on the Road. We consult them first. We recognize that we cannot just drop down into Toriando and not appreciate the king and the local government. So we do spend a week beforehand going to see the local leaders and getting their support. Because after we've left, they are the ones who will access our information. Direct claim turnaround, the average turnaround time of a represented claim with a lawyer is about 1,500 days for a big claim. A loss of earning claim that goes court for direct claim 971. So it's shorter to come directly. In a mail freight office, you actually prove you could receive, assess, adjudicate, and pay a claim in 6 months. And that's what we want to aspire to. But we recognize there's a long way to go. On cutting out the middleman, I absolutely agree in any social benefit, we should avoid intermediary loss. On the turnaround at the RAF, I think, thank you for the comment. It's definitely a collective effort led by our board. On RAF, yes, there are constitutional issues, but simply to say that the Constitutional Court did rule on some elements. And I think when the committee considers the legal aspect, that this will come into play. Average value of our claims at RAF on the road at Delta. The resistance of the panel of attorneys is really the old lawyers don't want to handle our files. Initially the request was to keep the old files and part from the new, so you phase them out. And there's a substantial number of old files. There are attorneys we've appointed, and they were appointed under the guise that they will receive work. They've hired people, they've bought office space. You know, we need to part. So it's a bit like if you change from one cellular network to another, and the old one says, no, but still use me for your incoming messages. So that really is the difficulty we have. But the panel, on interim panel, there is a handover. Our CEO and the team have processes in place to engage the judges. We've actually been commended because people thought we've dropped the ball on these cases, the ones in trial at the moment. There will be some instances where we do. But the intro panel has actually come to the party, and they've represented us. Today, as we stand here, we have over 90% of our current trial matters, and the team is busy working on them. There will be a cost of the handover, but remember, in any handover, there will be costs. It's built into the contract. None of them outside of the contract. The question then is, do you avoid handover costs and maintain an agreement that didn't have an SLA, that had run for a long time, that's not showing us value? I mean, we have a calculation which shows there were 500 plus breaches of the SLA by the whole panel in the last year. So if you're spending a billion plus rand, you want that. And that really says something wrong. Chair, I'm in the last stretch. The settling claims, the solution, our financial team, we estimate that in this financial year, an additional 7.8 billion rand would be beneficial to meet our productivity. The concern we have as the RAF is simply, if we keep running out of sufficient funding, at what point do we lose the productivity momentum? And when you consider what it has taken in the last 24 months to improve productivity, you don't want to do that, especially since people benefit from the outcome of that productivity. On fraud in RAF, yes, no fault will imply fraud, but the truth is, even under the RAF Act, you claiming for an accident that happened in the past for which the RAF was not present. So the risk of fraud will persist. By broadening access, yes, we may have a wider pool. By defining the benefits and reducing the payouts, the immediate lump sum payment, you mitigate some of the fraud exposure. But fraud will always be a risk that we must manage. On being slow to implement RAF, I think I just want to make one point. In the last year, our liability grew by 14 billion rand. That's 1 year. So if we don't change this fault dispensation, if we don't deal with the challenges, that liability will continue to grow. If we use the special permission as a baseline, that's 2000. Between 2000 and now, the liability has grown by almost 60 billion rand that government will pay. So the cost of slowing down the process is not immaterial. It must be done properly. It must be done correctly. But I think we should note that there's an urgency. Every year we let go by is a year that government has this bigger liability to fund. On the fuel levy, I think there's only so much you can add to the fuel levy. Remember, it's payable by consumers. So if you keep adding to the fuel levy for any reason, you must watch the affordability of those who buy the petrol. And if the price of petrol is high, you already have pressure
on petrol consumption. So there are considerations outside of the RAF that we need to pay attention to on the fuel level. There are economic considerations. If you choke fuel consumption, you may in turn have a negative effect on economic development. Similarly, you could argue the fuel levy is a regressive tax because it's only those who pay who can afford to buy it. But the percentage of their total income is equal whether you're rich or poor. So I think that's just bigger considerations than fuel levy. Actions taken by RAF against attorneys, we have a singular zero approach to fraud. The middleman we dealt with, and then RAF on the road, other strategies. What we've done is empowered our region. This is the last question, Sheikh. We've empowered our regional general managers. They are the bosses in the office. So they're introducing their own mechanisms. In the Eastern Cape, they have what they call open days. They have open day in Durban as well. They have many RAF on the roads. Others are present. Our Cape Town office presents a lot at naval offices and bases and so forth because you get the message out. And we also have work with basic education for squatter patrols, school safety and so forth. So the message really, it is going out. Jay, I think those would be the responses to the questions we were.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I think he did it in record time of less than 13 minutes that was given. Thank you very much. Second part of the chair, Honourable Mulaudzi, then will be followed by Honourable Ramatakas. But let me quickly say, for sure it will be important that there must be role clarification, particularly when you deal with matters of patients, because you've got patients that actually some of them will go do double duty in terms of your social grants and also coming into RAF. So therefore it becomes very important that the institutions work together to just check if there is no double dipping which may happen in the eventuality, particularly those that are disabled in this instance. And I think the question that comes to my mind is why are the lawyers refusing with the properties that does not belong to them? I assume that is government property under the leadership and under the ambit of RAF. So why is it that they are refusing this file so that for sure if need be the cases can close or can be looked into? Is there something that we as a committee can be able to do to assist in terms of dealing with these files which actually are still in the ambit of the lawyers? It's critical, very important. Honourable Lousy.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the follow-up questions is the one you asked. We can't have a lawyer who resist with the files without a reason. We need an explanation from you, Dr. Watson. Tell us what is the problem. Why are they refusing the fires? We can't just say crying that they are refusing the fires for years and years and years while they are holding RAF at ransom. Please, we need explanation about these lawyers who are resisting. The other question is about the e-filing, which you said you want to move away from papers. But bear in mind that according to the research and the statistics of the victims, more than 50% are unskilled in terms of this electronics. You see, we have areas in our areas, then the one is where within the cell phone does it have network. So when you consider to move away from papers, please have a space also for the unskilled people. Because this would be suitable for the people in towns, legal people who are educated to familiarize themselves with the electronics. The staff, they still have a room to apply everything in paper. And although that is most of the people who are skilled because they are people who are working with a certain percentage of their salary. But in terms of the road victims, you find people who are very much illiterate, who know nothing about anything called electronic filing of what. Don't move away from papers now. It is too soon. So I think another thing I want to know about the DOT, thank you very much, because you make it clear and you open the door that you're very easy for anyone to ask or care it. We need to be disheartened. We need to get the contacts, how to attach the to department, how to contact you to make an appointment to get clarity to the issue called RAPS. Thanks.
Honorable Sigande.
Chairperson, allow me, in fact you are not responding to Mr. Ngaus, but the thing is that I'm not also defending, but I'm subject for correction. I thought the issue of the attorneys who are resisting, not even us, as people who have succeeded to do legislation, already, because the entity is reporting to us that there's this challenge. What we ought to do ourselves, maybe they can assist us with some of the legislation where there are loopholes, so that we can tighten the screws. Because obviously, if I'm having money, if I'm making you, I won't want to go up because I'm making, I'm having money. I'll put another example. I don't say that, please, I don't want some people to interpret me wrong. As you indicated that there are a lot of fraud stuff, the racket. Do you think that I'm doing a self-introspection? Is it easy to crack the racket? It's not easy to crack the racket. So what we ought to do is to empower us, maybe there are laws which we're supposed to enforce. But further than that, I don't think it's sufficient. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
No, Chair, thank you very much. Just briefly, Chair. I hear the good doctor saying that probably the file equals money. This the lawyers are keeping because there's money in it. And if that is the case, I'm getting a bit curious, Chairperson. I know that earlier on I did suggest that we should not rush the process that is not in our hand. We should wait. When the DDD explained the process on the legislation and the consultation process, and when I listened to the doctor, the Watson, speak about the challenge, I have a bit of a concern. It's probably I want to make a suggestion, Chair, that maybe sooner without waiting for the period that the department has put together of the public comment, that perhaps we should have a conversation with the Department of Transport. The DDG raised the issue about my curiosity lies in the understanding the complexity of the lawmaking and the process, but I'm curious as to the extended delay that may drag on and the dragging on of that process, it has financial implications on the other hand. So in other words, the right hand and the left hand problem. So I'm detecting that problem, which I think is a conversation that we may have to have specifically sooner. This is more like a recommendation I'm making, that we should have that conversation. I don't know, and I don't want to make assumptions. Perhaps it is better that we engage with the department so that we understand the problems and the extension. Because it seems to me that the problems of the old Act is fairly clear what it is. And it seems to me that it's very clear what must be done in order to address that particular, the whole thing about the fault issue that repeatedly Dr. Watson speaks about. So, but I want to leave it here, Chair, that perhaps that we, sooner rather than later, that we should have this agent conversation with the transport around this particular piece of legislation. And maybe we could also help as a committee understanding now that the financial implications is fully being put before the committee in terms of understanding what is it. We will be standing in our duty if we don't also intervene. around that particular aspect, because I can clearly see, and I don't want to elaborate on this, that there is an issue that we need to urgently accelerate, Chair, if you agree, that this should overtake some of the, I know the program is fairly set, but if you could have a stage to inspect agent meeting of this and of the interaction, and that we should be able to do, and maybe we should be able to have the DG of the department also be part of that engagement, so that we have a clearly all in discussion around. Thank you, Chair.
Wise men always change their mind. Welcome, Honorable Mafida. We'll fill you in terms of the issues that were discussed in your absence, but if there's anything that you are mandated to talk to, you're at liberty. Honorable Kate.
Thank you, Chair. So firstly, I know that it's been partly covered, but it is a possibility that the department can please provide us with age analysis. I, for example, know of claims that have been outstanding for more than 12 years, where the breadwinner of a family were basically depending on the crumbs from the neighbourhood. So if we could do age analysis with a number of claims, how long those claims have been outstanding and how far that process is. Just a bit of a point of clarity. I think it's important for all the members to understand that the fuel levy is not, the whole fuel levy is not coming to RAC, okay? The fuel levy is split up. So RAC are getting 1.04 into the fuel levy, but I agree that the consumers cannot go and be taxed with a higher fuel levy. But it would be important to actually ring fence it and not just go into Pandora's for whatever comes up. I don't know if the department has seen this article of Sampelo Sima. Now, these are all the types of things that's been in the media. What is of great concern if we look at this one, which I can send it over if you haven't seen it, is where the training was sent, although in here it's actually a RAP consultant, Claudia said, yes, she knows the Sima guy. Okay, he subsequently passed away. But he had to travel to Kruman as an unemployed person, okay, and pay 950 rand to pay a doctor to get a report to take back to the road accident fund. Do we realize that people that are unemployed doesn't know where their next plate of food is coming from? How can we get them or force them to get reports from doctors of having to pay 950 rand as well as travel? I mean, they don't have vehicles. The next point is purpose. I'm one of those people that have been in quality management. I believe the one thing. I've put in the two first paperless systems in South Africa, in the field of ISO system. But I have learned one thing, that when you can throw paperless system into a factory, into manufacturing plant, you cannot put in a paperless system when it comes to rural communities. Yes, on average, they have more cell phones, more money is spent on airtime than what it is spent on actual food. But bottom line is, they are using basic technology. They do not have access to 3G, to email, on those telephones. So I'm just saying, be very cautious. We also, and I'm talking of personal experience, being resourced, we could put a membership system in and have it digitalized. Okay? It did not work. It actually cost when your fax facilities was expensive for them to back. Having to go to internet shops, all those type of things just did not work. I just want to also just, the last one, and I do appreciate, and I think it is important, Chair, that, we can wait for the process. I agree, like we've agreed for the workshop. But from the Department of Transport side, if they are prepared to just meet with us, the problem is, when you get questions and we are left in the dark, then where are we going to see the light? We start going to the media, and you start looking over your colleagues, and that's the kind of thing. Let us play it open. Let the department, let us meet with the department so that we are kept in the light and not in the dark. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's going.
nothing. Gone. Thank you very much, Doctor. It's yours. Thank you. I said that the chairperson will have just a bite before you, so that we are able to wrap and round up in the end.
Thanks, Chair. I think of the four issues that are basically critical for the board, I won't go into it too because they've been very well covered, right, and the long and short term financial situation. I think it's just fair that I speak on the panel issue, if only to reassure members that they are very much engaged. This is certainly, I've been on the board since 2010, but this is quite clearly the most potentially problematic issue. This is the issue of the tender panel. One of the mandates that the CEO was given on taking this job was to basically recalibrate our relationship with lawyers. These are very important stakeholders to the fund, and we want to move from an adversarial relationship to one that's cooperative. And we've certainly achieved a lot of that with the two issues, of course, where we understand the boxing gloves come out around the panel tender and the reps bill. But having said that, I sit with emails where lawyers basically commend the fund in terms of visible operational improvement. And we are very much desirous of a relationship that works well and then acceptable and things like that. But I must also give context that one of the critical issues where the board asked for the CEO we've got is because the board believed that when it comes to the issues of execution, when it comes to the issue of performance and contract management, is probably the best of the candidates that we have, because we realize that's not critical. In terms of staff, we've gone a long way, and if the fund has twice made 83% of increasingly difficult targets, it tells that's happening. Now, the lawyers that we work with are critical because then they now help us address the external stakeholder component, but from whom we also expect contract management, expect performance management. And it's not nice to basically receive, as I do sometimes, complaints from judges who tell us that lawyers don't show up and actually build it into their rulings and say it is not in the interest of the taxpayer for the Road Accident Fund to pay the lawyer's fees. I rule that these fees must be deducted or the penalty is transferred from the lawyer concerned. Now, those are the issues that we cannot back out on. And the issue of the new tender panel goes to the heart of what we need to do to extract value on behalf of the law of all taxpayers. It goes to refreshing the agreement that states, because we cannot say today with all of the issues we've got, we arrive in an SLA that was drawn in 1999. It's about showing as well that we meet where we recommend and actually commit to paying higher fees for the work that the legal profession is doing today relative to the past. But we are quite steadfast that we will extract value for the taxpayer, and we understand the issues that have to do with the panel and what it means for those who lose business. But the fund is not in a position to guarantee anyone work, just like any other professional. And we understand, of course, that the reps issue also complicates it. But I think I might as well, what I wanted to say in the end is that on behalf of the board, we are fairly more than satisfied with the performance of the CEO, the executive team, and all the rest stuff. But we're not saying we're there, but it is a good start. And I just want to round off by saying the clean audits bear testimony to the fact that work is done. more of the taxpayer rent is going towards the settlement of claims than any other category of expenses. Recently, you may have seen a case study by this that basically confirmed what we think we like. The founders of the first company compared to SARS, being compared to Land Bank. And we know that that comes from the operation, and we continue to press on. And then it's about basically looking to you to support us on the financial challenge that sits and looks at us, and of course the legislative environment which needs to change, both in the Short-Term Life Amendment Act and REF, and of course allowed you as our stakeholders in defending the old excellent fund, because when all of this is done, the only headline that should matter is that the REF is 97 billion rand in red, and we hope he will be on our side to say it is true, but a lot of issues are being addressed.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Dr. Watson.
Just to close, after the chair closed, just the loose items. It's really on the e-filing and the paperless system. I think to both questions, we're not saying that from step one it should be paperless. If you look at operations of the RF today, of our open files, they are literally paper. It's paper in a brown legal envelope. Now that has changed. So in our house, so to speak, we've got to move from paper. Like any business, your information comes in paper, you digitize it. Then you move on in a paperless format. But certainly you can't impose that on people, as you both, a member of the committee, have recognized, who may not be literate, who may not have access to the tool. But you want that to be available. So the paperless is actually within our environment. On the few living not being only for the RAF, that is correct. On the cost of compliance, we passed some regulations last year to assist, to allow us to pay for some of the costs that you've given as an example. But the current RAF actually provides for the claimant to go and do these things. The litigation process provides for it too. Part of the amendments we'd like to see to our current RAF Act exactly on these issues. So barriers to access can be removed. On the question of the age analysis, it is in our annual report. There's a nice chart that shows by number and percentage, so you can see. The point I want to make is, without a doubt, there will be exceptions, so where there are very long-standing claims. Often there's a reason. Sometimes it may be on the part of RAF, but sometimes it's actually dependent on other processes. But similarly, like any average, you will find that there are many instances where we pay a claim quickly. So I can, it's a year since the Pinetown crash last year when the 22 people were killed. And all those people, we've already paid over 20 claims. And all the ones that are outstanding, they're either about to be paid, subject to litigation, or there's information which is required. So we can get it together. We can pay in a year. And as our chair said, it's our business to make sure we do this. This becomes a norm and not just a standard deviation. I think, Chairperson, that really covers the last items. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I believe the committee members are satisfied with what that has been done. If so, we would like to thank the Chairperson of RAF and the other members of the board of RAF who have been the deputy chairperson in particular, and the rest of the members of the RAF board who are here today. And it's very pleasing to have so many members of the board all in one. At least we will know you. We ask questions when we come across you in corridors and wherever. We will always be on the alert, because this is of societal interest in the main, but also thank the CEO and the team of executive management from the RAF. It's good that you are here. For sure, when you go back to your boardrooms and to your offices, you won't be able to understand what members on behalf of the community's concerns are all about and what is expected of you in terms of moving South Africa forward. But let me thank the officials from the Department of Transport, Team Transport, as in those working with us, but also thank the members of the public. For sure, critical will be when we have to deal with the RAP. Would expect a lot of lawyers to come and really, as we will be going out into the public hearings, to really listen and deal with the issues, because this is one of the critical things that we believe people are keen in and waiting with anticipation, of course. And I hope that once the public hearings have been finalized, it will be fast-tracked so that it's able to reach the hallowed chambers of parliamentary business, and then we're able to deal with it. But I believe that we'll recuse honorable community members and we'll remain as honorable members so that we can be able to deal with minutes of previous missions that we have not been able to deal with due to pressing issues that we had to deal with. Thank you very much and enjoy your week further.